Now, as part of your counseling of a patient like that, what would you say in terms of what she might expect in terms of additional side effects or potential complications of adding in the bevacizumab?
So I tell the patient that the most common thing that she's going to notice in terms of addition of the bevacizumab is a bigger bill. It's a very expensive drug. In terms of the toxicities that the patient is likely to note, occasional headache, although a headache is fairly uncommon at the doses of bevacizumab that are used in the treatment of breast cancer. I warn them about the development of high blood pressure, and certainly blood pressure requires monitoring in women who are receiving bevacizumab. I warn them about the development of protein in the urine, and the amount of protein spilled into the urine does need monitoring in women taking bevacizumab. I talk about the concerns about bleeding, especially if they experience an unexpected trauma or require urgent surgery. And I also talk with them about the potential for vascular thrombosis, so blood clots, especially arterial blood clots that can be threatening but fortunately are pretty unusual.
What about quality of life and side effects?
The major quality of life impact of the bevacizumab is the infusion and the cost. I think overall, bevacizumab, in terms of what the patient typically experiences, is a pretty easy drug for them.
Now, I know every patient is different, but in general, when you present these types of options, what do patients usually lean towards?
It varies a lot. I'm continually struck by how different women value different things. A lot of women love being away from us, and those women typically would choose the capecitabine because it's an oral regimen, they can do it at home. Other women find a lot of value and reward from interacting with other breast cancer patients, oncology nurses, and so on in the infusion center. And those women may actually prefer a weekly treatment regimen that keeps them in the infusion center for, you know, a while during the week. It's a wonderful social situation for some, but not all patients.
So let's assume that this patient decides to receive the bevacizumab and paclitaxel. She has a very good response. Her pain goes away. She's doing very well, relatively few symptoms. And then things start getting worse again. The pain comes back. You know, maybe she's got a couple of new lesions on her chest x-ray or CAT scan of the lung. What would you think about doing at that point?
Well, I think there are a number of other active cytotoxic agents besides paclitaxel, and you could argue for any one of them. And they would include crossover at that point in time to nab-paclitaxel, capecitabine, and anthracycline, so doxorubicin, liposome encapsulated doxorubicin, vinorelbine, gemcitabine. There are a whole series of different agents that could be considered. In today's oncology setting, I think that the issue is much more not so much which of the chemotherapy agents is a patient going to receive over the course of her illness. It's really a question of what is the sequence of those agents going to be.